Hello, you're tuned to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, gay politics from both sides of the aisle. I found it rather odd, dare I say queer, disturbing at least, that gay marriage didn't come up. In fact, the word gay wasn't even uttered in the major party presidential and vice presidential debates. Civil rights of any stripe, for that matter, were barely mentioned. With the presidential debates behind us and the election just 12 days away, we'll talk about this and more tonight, and we'd love to have you join us. My in-studio guests are Democratic philanthropist and former ambassador James Hormel and Log Cabin Republicans Club of San Francisco Vice President Jason Clark. Joining us by phone from Oregon is Darlene Huntress, a former same-sex marriage campaign field director in Maine. Stick around and join us for an informative and, I hope, perhaps with some help from you, a lively discussion about the national election, marriage measures in several states, and issues affecting LGBT rights here in California. We'll take your comments and questions for these three experts live on the air starting in about 10 minutes or so. Here's the number to call, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-TALK. Now let me introduce our expert guests. 3 years ago, voters in Maine passed Question 1, which, similar to Prop 8 here in California, outlawed same-sex marriage. Darlene Huntress was field director for Maine's No on One campaign and is featured in the documentary film Question 1, which opens for a one-week run in San Francisco's Vogue Theater tomorrow night. That's Friday, October 26th. A pro-same-sex marriage measure is on Maine's ballot this year. Voters in three other states will also consider marriage rights November 6th. Darlene will fill us in on some of the campaign strategies used by both sides. She joins us by phone from Salem, Oregon, where she now lives. Darlene Huntress, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Hey, Eric. Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Great. James Hormel was ambassador to Luxembourg under President Bill Clinton and is a longtime Democratic activist, fundraiser, and philanthropist. He was a founder of the Human Rights Campaign Fund, now the Human Rights Campaign. In 1992, he was a member of the Democratic Platform Committee and was a delegate to the Democratic Convention in 1992 and 1996. His book, Fit to Serve, is about his years-long battle to become the first openly gay U.S. ambassador, the highest-ranking openly gay U.S. official at that time. He joined us on Out in the Bay last December to tell us about the book and his quite interesting life. James Hormel, welcome back.
Thank you, Eric. It's nice to be here.
Jason P. Clark is vice president of the Log Cabin Club of San Francisco, the local chapter of the national gay political group Log Cabin Republicans. He's a lawyer, lives in San Francisco's Coal Valley, and is running for California's Assembly District 17 against incumbent Democrat Tom Amiano in a strongly Democratic district. His appearance on Out in the Bay without Assemblyman Amiano here does not constitute an endorsement by Out in the Bay, nor by KLW. And for that matter, my other two guests' appearances tonight do not constitute an endorsement of them or their positions by Out in the Bay, nor KLW. Got that out of the way. Jason Clark, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thanks to all of you for being here. Let's start with same-sex marriage and the presidential debates. Same-sex marriage is a hot-button issue that certainly has been used as a wedge issue and a clear difference between President Obama and Mitt Romney and their running mates, yet it didn't come up, at least not in the televised major party debates. In fact, unless I missed it, and I did watch all four debates, the word gay was never even uttered. So why not? Who wants to take a crack at that first? James Hormel.
Well, the conventions certainly did not ignore LGBT issues, at least not the Democratic one. And there were some very positive statements that were made on behalf of gay rights, marriage equality, employment non-discrimination.
In fact, that's the first time that that has been included on a national party platform.
I believe so, yes. Although it's not the first time that the issues have been discussed. And as a matter of fact, I think the first openly gay person to address a national political convention was back in 1972 when George McGovern was nominated.
And Jason Clark, what do you think? How come gay marriage didn't come up at all in the debates?
Well, I think there's been a serious attempt to kind of moderate on the issue. You know, we went through some hard times back in 2004 when, you know, there was a kind of an anti-gay sentiment. But you see, you know, with Governor Romney, who has kind of more of a moderate record on this issue, there was kind of an attempt to moderate it and to bring to kind of the core focus of this campaign, which is has been the economy and economic issues, kind of bring those to the forefront and to leave kind of some of those culture wars into the sidelines.
Darlene Huntress in Salem, Oregon. By the way, I want to say, you know, don't be afraid to pipe up now and then, since we can't see you. It's harder for me to tell when you
okay,
might have something you want
to
say. What's your take on why gay didn't come up or same-sex marriage didn't come up? It hasn't been prominent in this campaign like it has been in some past years.
Well, I mean, you know, my take is that it didn't come up because frankly, the moderators, members of the media didn't ask about them. I mean, I agree with James. It's certainly that President Obama has not, nor have Democrats, shied away from talking about LGBT rights, same-sex marriage, don't ask, don't tell. I mean, so I think it's, and I actually think it's unfortunate. I think that I'd really be interested in hearing what Governor Romney had to say in a debate about his position on same-sex marriage, because he actually, you know, he's sort of moving towards the center, but he's actually on record as saying he was in favor of an amendment to the Constitution. So I would like to have heard where he's at now on that issue as part of the debate. So I was bummed that it wasn't mentioned, but I think it's just because the media isn't talking about it.
Why do you think the media is not talking about it? Any of you?
I'm just not sure that either the media or the politicians know what to do with the subject. It's had its focus in different ways over a generation now, and the reaction of the general public has changed as more and more people know gay people in their lives. So I really don't think that politicians understand how it may affect them, and they are shy about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes across the board.
James Hormother,
yeah,
thank you.
Darlene?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with James, and I also, you know, I would also say, too, that that there are so many, you know, with the economy the way that it is, and with, you know, the foreign policy issues and all the sort of really gigantic issues that we've been dealing with, I feel like that was going to be what they were going to talk about. And because I don't think when you ask folks what matters to you most in your presidential candidate, what issues do you care about the most, it's probably same-sex marriage and gay rights is not going to be in the top five list for most people.
Right.
And so that may be a reason why they sort of pushed it to the side.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of which, just a Tuesday of this week, the Log Cabin Republicans National Organization, according to the Associated Press, offered a qualified endorsement of Mitt Romney, calling it the right decision. I'm quoting here from the AP story, calling it the right decision for the nation, even as it slammed Romney's opposition to gay marriage. Rather than offer the Republican presidential nominee its full support, Log Cabin Republicans said it will focus its efforts instead on Republican candidates for House and Senate who favor equality for gays and lesbians. And here's a quote from the Log Cabin Republicans. If LGBT issues are a voter's highest or only priority, then Governor Romney may not be that voter's choice, the group said at its endorsement, adding that its members value a diverse set of issues. We believe Governor Romney will make cutting spending and job creation his priorities, and as his record as governor of Massachusetts suggests, will not waste his precious time in office with legislative attacks on LGBT Americans. So, Darlene, since you said this, and Jason, I want to ask you also. Darlene, you said that it seems like Mitt Romney's positions on gay issues has become a little bit less, a little more gay friendly. Would you agree with that, Jason, and how has it changed?
Well, I think you have to kind of look at the broader perspective here. You know, Mitt Romney is a business leader, and back when he was governor of Massachusetts, he was shown a willingness to engage gay people, and you see that in a number of appointments, judicial appointments that he did make on the issue. You know, he has said that he does not support same-sex marriage, and I'm going to suppose that is because of his own religious convictions. And, you know, it's an issue that has caused a lot of anxiety within both the wider gay community as well as the Log Cabin Republican community here. So I think that was the reason, you know, for the qualified endorsement. But that said, there's a lot of exciting things coming up. We have someone named Richard Tsai who is running for Congress, and he's openly gay and a Republican, and he looks like he may have a good chance of winning. And we also have a lesbian who's running. I think she's a Democrat in Wisconsin, and it looks like that she also might have an exciting chance to win as well. And, you know, of course, in Massachusetts, there's, you know, people like Scott Brown who have been speaking up in favor of LGBT rights. Scott Brown, of course, you know, argued very passionately that we should repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and was kind of a leader on that within our own party. So, you know, the Log Cabin Republicans have a lot to look forward to there. And I think in our discussions with Romney campaign, he's made it clear that his focus is going to be on improving the economy, which will help everyone, LGBT and non-LGBT Americans alike.
Well, I'm unwilling to give Governor Romney any slack on this issue because, among other things, disregarding any statements he's made publicly, he took it upon himself to sign a pledge that he would fight for and work for an amendment to the United States Constitution that would institutionalize marriage as only between a man and a woman. He did not have to do that. His religion didn't tell him to do that. He did it as a political gesture, and I am not willing to let him back away from that.
I also remember, and I think it happened, and this is why I wish it would have been talked about in the debate, because I think it was back in August of 2011. Governor Romney signed a pledge that had been drafted by the National Organization for Marriage, and this was a pledge that had been signed by Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum, among others, that vowed to appoint federal judges who would rule against gay marriage. You know, that he actually signed that pledge. I'd like to hear him answer to that as well. So I do wish that it had been discussed in the debate, because I'm not sure there's going to be another opportunity to hear what he has to say about both of those pledges, the one to make the Constitution ban gay marriage and the one to vow to appoint federal judges who would rule against gay marriage.
Do you, just curious, you know, how many gay and lesbian people do you think will vote for him, you know, just because if they're only people who are very conservative, fiscally, for example, or in other ways? I mean, I guess what I'm sort of asking here is, why does it matter that it didn't come up in the debates?
With respect to the gay voter, you mean?
Yeah, with respect to gay civil rights and with respect to gay voters, particularly.
Well, I'm not quite sure what really does matter in the debates, because they are really not debates. They are essentially matches between the candidates to see who can present the issues that resonate best for their constituents or for their potential constituents. And I'm saying this in a nonpartisan way. Mm-hmm. I find that the debates are very superficial.
Soundbite opportunities.
You said that they didn't talk about gay issues. They didn't talk about the environment. They didn't talk about climate change. There were all kinds of things that are really very pressing and important that were not discussed at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I would certainly have to agree with that. Jason Clark went away on that.
No, I have to agree with the ambassador there. You know, it's the debates to a large extent are scripted, and you know, they're designed by each candidate to try to show off their best qualities. And two, you know, I think, you know, there are just some issues that are also on the forefront of people's minds. And you know, when so many people have lost their homes and their jobs, culture wars are probably not things that are going to be on the forefront of their mind.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Democratic philanthropist and former Ambassador James Hormel, San Francisco Log Cabin Republicans Vice President Jason Clark, and Darlene Huntress, a former campaign field director for same-sex marriage in Maine. We'd love to hear from you. What's on your mind? Our phone lines are open, so if you have a question for any of these fascinating and informative guests, give us a call. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. The number is also on our Out in the Bay Facebook page, facebook.com/Out in the Bay. Let's talk about some of the other important issues from an LGBT perspective around the country. Marriage measures, that is, whether to allow or prohibit same-sex marriages, on the ballots in four states, Washington, Maryland, Minnesota, and Maine. And Maine's case for the second time in 3 years. So Darlene Huntress, who's on the phone with us from Salem, Oregon, worked on the No on One campaign in Maine in 2009. The measure passed, though, and like Proposition 8 here in California, it took away the rights of same-sex partners to marry. That's a right that had been put in place by Maine's legislature earlier that year. Here in California, it was the state courts, but in both states, voters removed rights that had been granted just months earlier to same-sex couples. So, Darlene, tell us a little bit about Question 1 in 2009 and then about what's on the ballot this year in Maine.
Sure. In 2009, Maine became the first state in the country to have the legislature pass and the governor sign a bill into law that allowed same-sex couples to marry. We were the first state to do it. It was, you know, and we celebrated for about 2.5 minutes because in Maine, as in other states, there's a constitutional amendment in the state of Maine that allows for citizens to collect signatures. And if they get a pretty small number of signatures gathered, they can put any law that's been passed by the legislature up for a vote, for a popular vote. And so that's, in fact, what happened. And so the law was signed in May 2009. The opposition turned in their signatures in September, and we were in a full-fledged referendum campaign for the fall of 2009. And so It was a close vote. We got 53-47. 53% of the state of Maine voted to repeal the law, and 47% voted to keep the law in place. And so, since then, Equality Maine, which is Maine's largest LGBT political organization, has been working really hard over the last, you know, the day after they lost the election. They started organizing again, and they've had thousands and thousands of conversations with people who were presumably voting against us in 2009 to try to, you know, start having these one-on-one conversations with them to sort of educate them and get them to move on this issue, and they've been really successful. And so in January of this year, they submitted enough signatures to get a proactive measure on the ballot. And so if this is actually approved, Maine would become the first state to actually legalize same-sex marriage solely by popular vote. And so they'll be voting in less than 2 weeks on that.
So you, when we spoke on the phone earlier this week, you said you were actually rather optimistic that same-sex couples, the tide has changed and voters are likely to approve this measure allowing same-sex marriage,
yeah,
legalizing same-sex marriage. Why is that? What's changed?
Well, I mean, I think things have changed both nationally, and I think they've changed in the state too. I mean, there are a couple reasons why I think they have a good chance. One has nothing to do actually with same-sex marriage, and then the other has everything to do with it. I think that in Maine, we're sort of looking at the perfect storm politically. For the first time in like 3 or 4 decades, Maine became an all-red state in 2010. A Tea Party governor had been elected. There's an all-Republican Senate, an all-Republican House. And so progressives in Maine are sort of chomping at the bit and really working hard to try to change the political landscape in the state. And then you also have a presidential election. So that tends to mean a high voter turnout, which I think for proponents of the marriage bill, of the marriage referendum question, this is actually a really good thing. You couple that with the fact that I think nationally the landscape has changed, the conversations have moved throughout the country. You have a sitting president who has come forward to say that he supports marriage for same-sex couples. You have DOMA, which I think is slowly falling down around us. You have Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, I just think that the political climate is different, and when the political climate is different, it just makes things different for the rest of us. And Equality Maine has just been really focusing not on so much getting more of our base out, but actually going into the rural areas, of Maine, talking to people of faith more than we did in 2009. And I think that they've just been really diligent and really deliberate about who they're talking to, which is a little bit different than what we did 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think the kind of conversations they're having are the critical ones. And, you know, you don't have to change everybody's mind. You just have to change, you know, maybe one out of every four people that you talk to, and they're going to be able to win this. So I think it's going to be really close. I don't think it's a done deal, but I do think it's ours to win. So.
Well, darling, congratulations on your work there, and on the work of all of the people with whom you collaborated, because it's been, I know, a very tough struggle in Maine, and I'm sure we all appreciate what you've done there. I'm a little less sanguine, I guess, about the possible outcome, simply because it's hard to trust the polls. We've seen mm-hmm. them before, and we've seen them tell us things that didn't, in fact, happen on this particular issue, especially. And also, what we have not really seen yet is the full force and effect of the money that may or may not come into Maine and other states to oppose this issue of same-sex marriage. And we know that there's going to be something, but we just don't know how much or what effect it will have.
That's Hold right. that thought, because I definitely want to talk to you. I know you, when we spoke last week, you said you wanted to talk about financing in campaigns.
Yeah.
Jason Clark, you've got a comment on this too?
Well, yeah, it's I see almost a little bit of similarity here with, you know, we had Proposition 8 in California, and before that we had the Knight Initiative, which I think was Prop 22. And we look at Prop 8 passed during an election year, during the last election cycle, and we saw actually a significant number of the people who voted for President Obama, who has now come out in favor of same-sex marriage, actually supported Prop 8. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to see, you know, in Maine, if, you know, the president's change in the position is actually going to encourage or motivate his voters to change their view on that, or if we're going to still see a significant percentage of the people who maybe turn out to vote for him also voting against LGBT rights in this issue?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really great question. But I also think that Maine is unique in some ways, because this is kitchen table conversation for Mainers. We've been voting on LGBT ballot measures in Maine for 30 years. And I think there's been a very slow movement towards full equality. That really started in 1972 when we introduced our first gay rights bill. So, I totally agree I don't believe the polls at all. In fact, I refuse to even look at any of the polling numbers, because I think people tend to lie when they're asked this question. I think especially now when it's starting to become you know, just politically incorrect to say that you're against gay marriage or gay rights, that people are sort of polite bigots on the phone and are maybe not gonna tell the truth when they're being asked the question. I just think that Maine is uniquely positioned, in that we went through this in 2009. We walked out of that campaign with 275,000 identified voters who supported us, and we started from there to build an even bigger base of supporters. I don't think it's going to be easy, and like I said, I don't think it's a sure bet, because as we all know, our track record is not very good when we're asking the majority to vote on minority rights, and so there's a reason that we've lost these sort of elections, you know, 33 times, why we're 0 for 33, because it's really hard. So I mean, I think they have a great shot, and my fingers will be crossed on election day, and I'll be watching with great interest to see how it turns out.
So let's talk about the other states, Maryland, Minnesota, and Washington, which also have same-sex marriage issues on the ballots. What do you folks know about those particular measures?
Well, we've been watching them, but I'm certainly not going to make predictions on any of them. I do think that Maine may have the edge over the other three. Washington also has already indicated by ballot that they would be supportive. There again, there's a very active and probably vicious campaign that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Darlene, I want to ask you, you're in this movie, a documentary film that's just come out, which is called Question One. It's opening in the Vogue Theater in San Francisco tomorrow night for a week. And I haven't seen the film yet myself. I've seen little bits of it, and it's been highly recommended to me. You're in it as one of the main figures because of your role in the No on One campaign back in 2009. But one of the things that I've been told about the film is that it's sort of inside both campaigns at once. And so you're seeing the strategies that both sides are using. And if you could tell us, Darlene, what you see similar that's being used in states across the country.
Sure. I think that particularly in 2009, in 2009, the PR firm that did the work on Prop 8, Schubert and Flynn, if you guys are from California, you've probably heard of Frank Schubert. They and Jeff Flint, they were the PR firm who was responsible for all those awful television ads that were hitting the airwaves in California on Prop 8. And they also were the PR firm who were hired by the Yes on One campaign in Maine in 2009 to do all their PR work. And in fact, if you watch the film, you see pretty quickly that they weren't just doing PR, but I think that they were essentially running the campaign from California. And in fact, if you look at the ads, the Prop 8 ads that hit the airwaves in California in 2008, they're exactly the same ad with the same script. It's just different actors with different accents, talking about Maine instead of California. So they took the playbook from Prop 8, and they used it in Maine in 2009. They use a lot of the scare tactics that if marriage is legal, they're going to teach about, they're going to teach this stuff in schools, and there's going to be like, they're going to teach about gay sex and all this crazy stuff. And they used it in Maine, and it worked. It was, I think for a lot of folks, these 30-second ads can be really effective, particularly if they draw upon some of your fears. So
fear is always such a good motivator, isn't it?
What's that?
I said fear is always such a good motivator, isn't it?
Well, it really is. And I will say this, that they're not there in the movie. You actually hear the campaign director from the Yes on One campaign. His name is Mark Muddy. And he actually says on the camera, that he fully acknowledges that their ads are blatantly, that they're lies, that they're using hyperbole, that what they're saying isn't really true. And so I don't think you're going to see a lot of the kids taught in school stuff happening in Maine this year, but they are talking about, they have an innkeeper from Vermont who says that because they wouldn't allow a lesbian couple to stay at their inn, they were sued, and this is what's going to happen in Maine if you have gay marriage legal there. It's still hyperbole. It's just a different kind of lie this time around.
That scene that you mentioned a moment ago in the film, I spoke to the film's director Joe Fox earlier in the week, and he said that was sort of even surprised him that this campaigner. Against same-sex marriage was so candid, so candid on film about this.
That's really amazing. I mean, it's amazing how much he's really open, and I think he talks. I think he is much more. He shares much more of his personal feelings and fears than anyone else in the film, and it's very Shakespearean, I have to say, watching him. Sort of, even though he won that night, he sort of unravels at the end of that film, and it's really kind of horrifying to watch it. But
well, I look forward to seeing it. That's again, the film is called Question One. It opens for a 1 week run in San Francisco at the Vogue Theater tomorrow night, and there's going to actually be a post film discussion. Darlene will be there. I'll be moderating it. Joe Fox, the director, will be there, as well as a couple of other plaintiffs from two of the gay marriage cases. So it should be an interesting event. It's 7:30 tomorrow night at the Vogue Theater. Information online at Q1-themovie.com. That's Q1-themovie.com. You're listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Democratic philanthropist and former ambassador James Hormel, San Francisco Log Cabin Republican Vice President Jason Clark, and Darlene Huntress, a former campaign field director for same-sex marriage in Maine. We'd love to hear from you. We realize we're competing with the Giants game two of the World Series, but we know there's some of you listening. We really do, so don't take it personally. If no one calls, I'll try not to. But the phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of the area, you can call toll-free 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. I'd like to know, you know, listeners, what's most important to you on the November 6th ballot? Are the major candidates giving gay issues, LGBT civil rights, their proper due? Do you feel included, taken for granted? Or are gay issues just not that important right now, considering the many other important matters our nation faces, our state and local governments are facing? Again, the call-in number is 866-798-TALK. Or here in the 415 area code, 841-4134. So just to let you know, also, This Way Out will be back at its usual time next week at 7:30 here on KALW San Francisco. So for you folks here in the studio, what is most important to you on the November 6th ballot, either nationwide or here in California? Of course, Jason, you're up for election. So besides besides your run for assembly, what's most important to you on the November 6th ballot?
Well, you know, just a comment about that. It's interesting. Both myself and my opponent are gay, and you know, you don't often see that, and it's kind of nice. You know, you talk about LGBT issues. Well, the issue here is can we actually talk about the issues instead of who we sleep with? You know, and I think it's interesting in the gay community, a lot of us is kind of wrapped around our LGBT identity, and there's sometimes not a lot of discussion over, you know, some of the other policy issues that we feel strongly about but aren't necessarily tied up in our own sexual orientation identity. But, you know, for me, and I know I talked with the ambassador a little bit, you know, about, you know, this is going to be a billion-dollar presidential campaign. There's a lot of money flying around, and for me, one of the more important things on the ballot is Prop 32, which seeks to ban direct contributions by unions and by corporations to candidates. And as a candidate, I feel kind of strongly about this because, you know, I can see the corrupting effect that, you know, corporations and unions might have on elections when they directly contribute. All of my contributions, just to clarify, have come from individuals. But, you know, it can be a seriously corrupting influence, especially if when you go to vote on legislation, you have the very interest groups that have now contributed and bankrolled your entire campaign mm-hmm. are now standing there asking you for your support on issues that may not be in the best interests of our state. So,
what unions do you think have been the most egregious in their support and wanting a payback later? And James Hormel, do you want to weigh in on that as well, or
you might want to
Jason Clark
that question.
First?
Well, you know, the prison guards union is a usual whipping boy. I mean, the governor gave them a raise, and at the same time, he cut teacher salaries and you know, funding for classrooms. So there's one. You know, in San Francisco, you look at the Muni Union, which has often been a whipping boy for issues such as this as well. So, but, you know, I think, you know, not to completely demonize unions, but, you know, almost every group that does give money is some sort of interest that has in some way negatively affected the process.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get too much into the 30 versus 32 thing right now for the statewide propositions. But does a 32 wipe out 30 if 32 passes or if they both pass, are they somehow both going to reform state finances?
I think you're thinking of 38 versus 30.
I thought it was 30 and 32. I'm sorry if I'm missing
Well, the 30 and 32 campaigns have been linked in terms of people. The governor's allies have been urging you to vote yes on 30 and no on 32, but 38, I believe, is Molly Munger's proposition, which is in direct a conflict with the governor's, which is 30. And both of them talk about funding. Both of them talk about funding education at some level, although I think it's debatable whether 30 actually will fund education. So they're both in direct conflict.
Okay. James Hormel, any comments on these statewide ballot issues?
Well, I'm reluctant to comment because I haven't thoroughly analyzed them yet.
Fair enough.
But I do look with a jaundiced eye on many ballot propositions, especially if you don't know who's funding them and for what purpose, because they're there for a purpose, for some constituent interest.
Now, you mentioned earlier campaign financing, and I promised to get back to that. What are your concerns about, the amount of money? You mentioned the amount of money that's going to be spent on this presidential campaign being so huge. What was the number again?
I think over $1 billion, but...
That's the presidential campaign,
right.
And then we have all these other campaigns.
Sure.
Uh-huh. And it adds up to huge sums. I mean, I read today that the person who is running for the Senate in Connecticut has spent $77 million on her campaign over a three-year period. That's one senatorial campaign.
Right.
And that's one half of it, I should say. Who knows what the other side has spent. So, when you add up all those figures, it's way into the billions. I brought a little statement with me because I was asked by the BAR about a year ago if I would make some New Year's predictions, political predictions, and I said, I really wasn't in a position to make any kind of guesses.
Okay, so that's the BAR is the Bay Area Reporter with the Gay Weekly paper here in San Francisco.
That.
That's quite all right.
But the one thing that I would guarantee would be that this election year is going to be far and away the most expensive we've ever had. I projected upward of $8 billion. And I looked at the gross domestic product of Haiti, which is considerably less than that, and it just made me think, what could we do if this money were used in a more productive fashion? It really distresses me enormously.
And is that the statement you were mentioning for the BAR?
Well, yes, and it's a little self-serving, I think.
So you're not going to read it after all?
I said I predict that not one congressional voice, not one, will be raised to propose a rational way to reduce and control campaign spending. And I say that with a total nonpartisan varnish.
It does seem to be something that's kind of – it's so ingrained, it's impossible to stop. Jason Clark, it looks like you've got to
– Well, you even have the mainstream media that jumps on the bandwagon. I have a limited campaign budget and, we wanted to run some advertising and they said, a political campaign, and they pulled their advertising rates, their regular ones, and gave me a political advertising sheet, which was 25 to 30% higher. So, you have a lot of business interests that were, stand to profit
from
this.
Sure, yeah, there's lots of money to be made in politics without being a candidate. Darlene Huntress, do you have any sense of the amounts of money being spent on the campaigns for and against same-sex marriage? I know Proposition 8 was incredibly expensive here in California.
I don't know the numbers. It's the one thing that I sort of haven't looked at. I think in Maine, I read the other day that the Yes on One campaign had raised over $3 million, and that the No on One had not quite hit $500,000. And while that might sound like, a small amount of money for California, for a state like Maine where there's 1.2 million people who are registered to vote, it's a ton of money. I mean, I am sure that as the last 10 days sort of wind down, that lots more money is going to come in from different national organizations in the country. I'm sure that the National Organization for Marriage will put a bunch of money in all four of those states. I I really think they'll end up spending just, you know, millions on these four campaigns. It's really interesting for me because, you know, this is more on the candidate stuff, but in Maine, where I lived for 48 years or 45 years, we have a clean elections law there, and so candidates can choose to be clean election candidates, and almost every single time, both Democrats and Republicans do that. And so, and I think it works well because it is such a small state, but you see very little television advertising because they only get a certain amount of money that they're allowed to spend on their campaign. And what they do instead is, you know, they literally go out into their districts and knock on doors and go to town hall meetings, and you actually get to talk to the candidates face to face. And then, you know, I came out here to Oregon where there is no such law, and I'm blown away by the amount of television. I mean, it's just one campaign ad after the other. And I've never met my legislative representative ever in my life since I've lived here. So it's just, I really prefer the Maine way to this.
Well, the money also flows from one state to another in a way that that can't be measured under current laws and regulations. Mm-hmm. And and the effect is stunning. California is certainly a net exporter
of money. Okay. We saw a lot of money flow into California during the Prop 8 campaign.
Yes, that's true. And that happened also in Iowa in 2010 after the Iowa Supreme Court. A seven-judge court issued a 7-0 opinion that held that Iowa's ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional. The next year, three of those judges were up for reconsideration. Iowa has a merit system of electing judges so that their intention, when it was put in place 50 years ago, was to keep the judiciary independent. And it has had the exact opposite effect. Money poured into Iowa, poured in from God knows where, and the three judges who were up for reconsideration all lost their seats.
And you think you're afraid that's going to happen again, the four judges that are left?
It's happening right now. Right now, a fourth one is up.
Okay.
And the same thing is being done to him.
Mm-hmm. And that's because judges are supposed to be impartial, and they ruled 7-1 banning same-sex marriage constitutes. I'm sorry, 7-0 unanimously that it was unconstitutional to ban same-sex marriage, and they've been tossed off by moneyed elections.
And these judges were appointed by both Republican and Democratic means.
You mentioned when we spoke on the phone last week, James Hormel, that Republicans are outspending Democrats by quite an amount. Do you have any figures on that?
Well, I wish I could figure, but you can't. Partly because of Citizens United and other decisions of that nature that prevent us from knowing who specifically is giving to what.
Would you agree with that assessment, generally speaking, Jason Clark?
Well, definitely not in California. You know, at a national level, I know that Romney has outraised President Obama, but here in California, you have it's really the special interests that have just completely taken over and are really running the money machine. If you remember in the gubernatorial race against Whitman and Brown, Whitman put, I think, $140 million of her own money into it, and special interests put almost $100 million into Governor Brown's campaign. So, you know, separating out, you know, Meg Whitman's personal wealth, you really have, and you have special interests funding a lot of these propositions, a lot of these candidates. So it's kind of disheartening sometimes, I think.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you if there's other items of particular interest to LGBT voters here in local Bay Area elections. Is it important in this day and age, for example, that we have a gay representative on the BART board or the community college board? Why or why not?
It would be very disturbing if we didn't, I think, in a constituency that has so many LGBT constituents in it. I think that here we do live in a bit of a bubble, and we have come to a point where I think decisions, political decisions, can be based on the merits of the candidates,
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily on any of the other attributes that may have to do with their social qualifications.
So, Jason Clark, in your campaign for Assembly, how have you used your gayness as part of your campaign? How does it figure in?
Well, it's always going to be a part of me, but it's one aspect of me, and you know, I think you know.
Primary, for example, right now, I mean, you're running against Tom Amiano.
Right.
He's gay, so there's no issue there in a sense. But in the primaries, did that matter more to that you could did being gay help you at all in your campaign?
Well, I'll say no, but specifically because of Proposition 14, with the top two primary, if there's only two people in the primary, those two people automatically go on to the November ballot. So there were only two of us on the ballot. So
even in the primary?
Yes. Yeah, so okay. it's the exact same race that we're running again, only with a lot more voters.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think, you know, what the goal of this whole movement is to be able to come out and say, hi, this is who I am. This is what I believe, without having to say, you know, oh, also I'm gay, and to have to plan your whole campaign around who you happen to love. It's you know, it's what we're striving to overcome. And you know, we do live in a little bit of a bubble here in California, but you're starting to see it where people aren't really in other parts of the country. It's not so much about whether you're gay or not. It's about the issues that you bring to the table. And are you going to bring issues to the table that benefit a large majority of the people, or are you going to bring issues that only, you know, help your special interests or are a narrow group?
Darlene Huntress in Salem, Oregon, and previously from Maine, outside of the bubble. Does it? How much does sexuality figure into politics in the places you've lived?
It's a really interesting question, isn't it? Because in the one hand, you know, we are working towards that day where it becomes almost irrelevant in the same way that I have blue eyes and not green eyes, that it's a part of who I am, but it's not all of who I am, and that, you know, you're judged by the merits that you bring for whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. I mean, I think that's the goal. That's where we want to be. We want it to become a society where we can just sort of be gay or be lesbian or transgender, and it's just a part of who we are and not our most identifying quality. All of that said, it's extraordinarily inspiring, I think, in other parts of the country outside of the bubble. And I think particularly when I think about my home state of Maine and some of the more rural communities and of the LGBT folks that I met in those communities, every time a Tammy Baldwin happens or any time an openly gay or lesbian person does something significant, like get elected to any kind of an office, but particularly when it's a, you know, the U.S. Senate, it's a big deal. And I think it's important. And so in that way, it's sort of a, you know, the Harvey Milk thing. You have to come out every single day, because I think outside of the bubble that you all live in, for folks back in Maine or in Oregon or in the middle of the country who every day are trying to come to terms with their sexuality and their orientation and all of the discrimination and all of the things that happen to them because of that, when they see these success stories of folks who can be out and be successful and have a good and decent life, I think it's inspiring and it's really important. So, I'm not sure that even answers the question, but I do think that we want to get to a point someday where I'm not, if I'm running for office, I'm not Darlene Huntress, the openly gay, the open lesbian who's running for office. But until we get to that point, I have to be Darlene Huntress, the open lesbian who's running for office.
Yes, right? It's ironic, isn't it?
Ironic? How so?
Well, I mean, to deal with a matter which should be nobody's business, mm-hmm. you have to be public about it.
Right.
And it's interesting how things have shifted over a period of time. I remember how excited I was to hear about some young man in the middle of Missouri who had been elected mayor of a small town and was openly gay, and it just was like an explosive piece of news, and very heartening and very inspiring.
I have two teenagers who are freshmen and seniors in high school, and whether or not someone's gay or not is just almost completely irrelevant to them. It's just a non-issue, and so the world is changing, and I think there are those stories like, you know, the one that James just shared about that period of time when that was such a big and important thing, and now we're moving into a world where this generation of kids that are coming up are just completely already there.
And yet we still seem to hear stories of kids, gay teens, even in the Bay Area, who get harassed and,
absolutely,
you know, commit suicide, yep, and stuff like that. So,
yep. I mean, it's not a perfect world, and there's still a lot of work for us to do, but then I think that it's things like what we're talking about today, you know, these ballot measures in these states, candidates who are openly gay and running for office, a president who is willing to say out loud that he supports gay marriage. I think all of these things are building us toward a place where hopefully somewhere down the road in the next generation, there'll be fewer and fewer kids who are bullied. I mean, we saw what happened last year with all the kids being bullied and the LGBT suicides. I mean, we can't let up. We can't get comfortable. We can't think that where we are at right now is good enough because it's so much better than it was 20 years ago or even 2 years ago, right? We still have to keep doing the hard work every single day of changing hearts and minds, and we can do that in our political work. We can do that in our social work. There are lots of ways to do it, but we just gotta keep doing it and not let up.
Jason Clark, I want to ask you before we run out of time, how do you feel the log cabin Republicans have influenced the Republican Party?
Well, you know, just like in the Democratic Party, which kind of went through this process a number of years ago, we have been fighting on the inside for equality and to improve both our stature within the party and to kind of change minds. And you know, in the last 10 years, we've seen a number of county chairs who are openly gay here in California have been elected. And we've seen now we have a member of LCR California is actually serving on the California Republican Party State Board. So, you know, and it's been a battle to some extent. But, you know, I'm really proud of the things that our group has done on a national level. You know, we filed a lawsuit against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And we really kind of, you know, make President Obama and Congress, we forced the issue. You know, we had a number of federal judges at the district court and also at the appellate court level say, strike down Don't Ask, Don't Tell as unconstitutional. And a number of judges said they told the military they had to end the policy immediately. Mm-hmm. And this really forced the hand. And you know, we had a court case a couple days before the vote, and you know, I think it really helped move things forward. And you know, we've had a lot of help from allies such as, you know, Susan Collins and you know, Senator Brown and our allies there. So you know, it's hard work, but I'm really proud of what we've been able to accomplish, and I think that we have a lot more that we're going to be able to accomplish in the near future.
I'm kind of curious. You know, when I talk to friends, they kind of said, you know, gay Republicans, they sort of think of as sort of in line with gay Catholics. You're in this organization that that doesn't want you, or an institution that doesn't want you. And does the GOP kind of treat log cabin Republicans like this little gnat that they wish would go away, or do you find you're respected within the Republican larger organization?
Well, I think you know, and especially with my campaign and my dealings with the state party, I have people who disrespect me, but I have people who respect me. And I think no matter who you are, you're always going to have groups of people like that. But you know what interests me, you know, especially is you know, here in America, we like to put people in boxes. They say, okay, you're gay, you're a woman, you're African American, you're Jewish, and if you're put into this box, you're expected to act a certain way and think a certain way. And, you know, I refuse to be put into a box. I refuse to let people tell me how I need to think. And so for a lot of people on the outside, they say, how can you be gay and be a Republican? You know, it's like self-hating. And I'm like, well, you know, what right do you have to tell me what what I should think and how I should think. And, you know, this is the type of thinking that thinking outside of the box that requires, you know, change in the Republican Party.
Darlene Huntress, a last question for you, and that is, what lessons do you think California might learn from the experiences of Equality Maine? Did I get the organization's name right?
You did. Well, I mean, I think every campaign is different. Every state is different. Clearly, the sort of campaign that we can run in Maine is nothing like what you would have to run in California, just by virtue of the size of the state and the population. And so, I mean, I think that makes things, it sort of separates us and the kind of campaigns that we run. But I do think that there is one thing that's sort of consistent in all of these campaigns, and that is to not believe the polls, you know, to never believe if it says you're way ahead that you're way ahead, because I think that people lie to pollsters, to anticipate the nastiest, craziest stuff coming from the opposition and to be able to answer that in a thoughtful way in your own messaging and in your own work, but to also, you know, sort of answer and then make sure that you are educating at the same time and not get lost in the opposition's talking point. And then I just think you just have to keep doing it till it works. I mean, we're going to go through this again in Maine after just 3 years ago losing. But I think because we came out of that campaign stronger than when we went into it, that we're positioning ourselves to be in a much better place this time around. So, you know, I mean, like I said, I think they're all unique, but we have things to learn from each other, and I think that it would be great if state organizations are talking to each other that have been through this and sharing experiences and messaging and all the stuff that works, and sooner or later we'll figure it out, and then we'll win them all.
Thanks very much. James Hart-Melanie, final comments from you?
Well, I think certainly on the federal level, there's a lot of work to be done. And it depends on our willing to be visible. It depends on our willingness to present ourselves as members of this society. It invites us to make clear to everyone that the so-called gay agenda is to make a better world for everyone. It's as simple as that. And the issue of marriage is an issue of equality. And the issue of employment discrimination is an issue of equality. People need to realize that so long as we have and we don't have ENDA, so long as we have DOMA, we are second-class citizens.
Thanks very much. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, Gay Radio from San Francisco. I want to thank my guests, Jason P. Clark, Vice President of Gay Republican Group Log Cabin Club of San Francisco. Learn more online at logcabinclubofsanfrancisco.org. He's also running for California State Assembly against incumbent Democrat Tom Amiano. James Hormel, former ambassador to Luxembourg, whose fascinating memoir, Fit to Serve, details the long anti-gay battle against his appointment to this high post by President Clinton, also a longtime Democratic activist and philanthropist. Learn more about him and his book online at jamesc.hormel.com. And Darlene Huntress, field director for the No on One campaign in Maine in 2009. She now works for the Alliance for a Just Society, a national social justice organization. Darlene is a prominent figure in the documentary film Question One, which opens for a week-long run in San Francisco's Vogue Theater tomorrow night, Friday night, October 26th. After the film, tomorrow night, I'll be moderating a discussion with audience members and Darlene, film director Joe Fox, and plaintiffs in a couple of the same-sex marriage legal cases. More info on the film called Question One at Q1-themovie.com. That's Q1-themovie.com. Also want to thank Dave Mahone for helping out tonight. Quickly want to mention that on November 14th at Café du Nord in San Francisco, my co-host Marilyn Pittman and I are being honored for our program. It's the annual Excellence in Journalism Awards being given by the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association Northern California Chapter. Info on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outinthebay, Wednesday, November 14th at Café du Nord in San Francisco. You've been listening to Out in the Bay. Marilyn Pittman and I have been producing Out in the Bay for 8 years now. We're independent. That means not a staff production of KALW. KALW provides studio use and airtime, but no financial support. We could use your help. Go to outinthebay.com and learn how to donate. You can also download free podcasts on our website and get the Stitcher app to hear Out in the Bay and other radio programs on your mobile phones. Like to also thank tonight Joanne Marr, our studio engineer, and Ted Wigga and the whole team at WY Enterprises for maintaining our website, wyenterprises.com. Thank you so much. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.